Hi, I'm Ros from World Have Your Say. This is a download from the BBC. If you'd like to read more information and our terms of use, take a look at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. Here's today's show.
We have heard the news from the BBC. Now it's your turn. Call country code 44 20 78 30 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Ros Atkins. This WikiLeaks story continues to dominate news agendas around the world, and your discussions are swirling in many different directions, but underpinning most of them is the desirability of transparency and where it should and shouldn't apply. And this idea reaches way beyond diplomatic cables and governments. It's about what information you think should be in the public domain. Do you aspire to a world with as few secrets as possible? Or is hiding the absolute truth an essential part of human interaction, whether in government, in business, or in your personal life? If you're online, you can go to facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Ben's online, keeping you company and approving all of your messages. We're curious, would you be happy to share as much as possible, like the price you paid for your home, or your salary, or the treatment you've received for an illness, or maybe the emails you exchanged when negotiating a deal? Gary in the States has emailed us to say it's definitely, on the matter of transparency, one rule for government, another for individuals. Do you agree?
Phone country code 44 20 70 83 72 72.
Email what have you sent at bbc.co.uk.
A couple of things to mention just before we get underway. A number of you in Berlin have been emailing, including Sarah, who, believe it or not, lives in a water tower in northeast Germany. You've noticed that the BBC shifted to 94.8 FM in Berlin, but you're complaining about your ability to tune in because of music stations near to us on the dial. I've passed all of your comments on to the people who look after these things and will let you know. In the meantime, if the reception's not good enough, you can hear us at bbcworldservice.com. And also, looking online just before I came into the studio, clearly these issues about MasterCard, Visa and PayPal stopping their processing of payments to WikiLeaks is a big deal to a lot of you. So if any of you use one of those three companies, will it have any effect on your attitude towards them or your use of their services? Do call us up. It's country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. That's country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Well, let me introduce you to four guests from different parts of the world who are going to address this idea of a transparent world and whether that is desirable to all of us, whether we want this transparency in our individual lives as well as in our government's lives. Here in the studio with me is Charles Crawford, who spent three decades working as a British diplomat, mainly in Eastern Europe. Charles, thank you very much for coming in.
Good evening.
Joining us in a very difficult hour is Anthony Lowenstein, who's in Sydney. He's a journalist and author. Anthony, thanks for doing this for us so early in the morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We also have with us Andrew Leung, who's been on the programme many times. He's a China specialist based in Hong Kong. Hi, Andrew. Thanks to you as well for staying up late. Wow.
Yep, thank you. Thank you very much indeed.
And last but not least, we have Barbara Sherbachev, who's a blogger who's been writing about these issues. She's based in the UK. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi. Well, Anthony, let me start with you. Do you think that we should take the idea of transparency as put forward by WikiLeaks and start applying it to our own lives as well?
I very much think so. I think one of the things that WikiLeaks has revealed, both in the last few weeks with Cablegate, but also with many of its releases in the last years, is actually how much information the general public does not know about how the world works. Now, one could suspect certain things, but now we have evidence in black and white, whether it's about the Afghan war, the Iraq war, diplomacy, etc. And I think one of the strengths and importance of what WikiLeaks and other whistleblower websites and individuals are doing is actually revealing to a very, very sceptical public who, generally speaking, in study after study in the UK, Australia, America and elsewhere, fundamentally do not trust many aspects of their government. So therefore, if there can be light shed on how our system works, and I think the truth is that the level of support that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks receives in Australia at the moment and many other countries is indicative of the fact that many people crave and believe in the concept of free speech, which is not just a word and or two words that actually mean nothing. They actually do mean something. And I think transparency can...
But, Anthony, you're talking about governments. If I said to you, will you tell me how much you earn or how much you paid for your house, or will you share with me the emails of the last book deal you negotiated, would you be prepared to offer that information up?
Look, possibly yes, possibly no. It depends on the question. I think there's a difference, though, between individual transparency and governments. I mean, governments work for us. They're elected by us. They should be representing us. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that WikiLeaks has done particularly, although not solely, is focus on issues of the wars that the West are involved in, Iraq and Afghanistan particularly, which is not so much what...
Okay, so you're concentrating on the government side of things. Barbara, what's your view of this? Would you go further and say, actually, this movement for transparency is something a bit more fundamental about how we all go about our lives?
Indeed. I published a book last year called Confessions of a City Girl, which is essentially about the greed and excess of the city. It's an expose. And, you know, it wasn't so much the champagne and the money that shocked people. It's more like the cheating and the lying. That's the stuff that people don't really read about very often, and the stuff that WikiLeaks has revealed in the past few weeks to the whole world. So I think... It's quite astonishing, not so much the information. Anyone who follows world affairs will not be shocked so much at what's been revealed through WikiLeaks, but the way that it's come out, you know, through just a few channels, the New York Times and Der Spiegel and The Guardian, and the way that Assange has been vilified, I think, you know, that's what's really shocking about the revelations. And he's been portrayed as a menace to society when he's not even the one that stole the...
Well, he's being portrayed as that by some people. He's being portrayed as a hero by others. But Barbara, again, let me push you on this. You're saying this about governments, but what about yourself? Do you think it would be useful if the companies you work for shared how much money they pay every single person they employ? Would it be useful if we all shared the medical information we have on our doctor's records to help common research? Should we take this transparency further?
I think you have to look at what's in the public interest. I mean, I think a lot more transparency has to be shown on how banks are paying their employees and what they're doing with their profits. You know, for instance, front running is still a huge problem in the city, and it's pervasive, and very little press has been shown on it. And you know, on another hand, you know, I wouldn't want to read about the sordid sex life of you know, all of these bankers or politicians. It's not in the public interest as much as you might like to read a tabloid. It's not going to change the world. And I think you know, I think what you know, there has to be some judgment, and you have to draw the line somewhere.
So you say you have to draw the line somewhere, and I guess, I mean, this whole program has come out of discussions we heard on yesterday's World Have Your Say, and many discussions we're seeing online, where people are discussing where you place that line, where transparency should not go. Charles Crawford, what's your view of this from a diplomat's perspective?
Well, it's a huge subject. I mean, it goes without saying. I suppose I don't want to you know, necessarily disagree with what's been said so far. We all have our views on what is reasonable privacy. The last speaker made a point about drawing the line. Well, different people would draw the line in different places. I think I'd start off by saying that there are governments in the world which take transparency seriously, namely democracies. And there are governments in the world which don't think that the...
Well, there's some evidence that some democracies aren't taking...
No, I think most democracies...
transparency incredibly seriously.
No, I don't think that's right. I think most democracies are, in the nature of being a democracy, committed to some idea that the citizens own the government. There are plenty of places in the world where that simply doesn't apply.
But I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but the whole point of these leaks from WikiLeaks is that it's proved that what democratic governments, in particular the United States, are saying in public and what it's doing out of the sight of the public are two quite different things on many occasions. That's not commitment to transparency, is it?
Well, maybe it is, because if you want the public to... If the public want an efficient government, what is an efficient government? For example, if you want our government to be a British government, if you want them to be knowledgeable about events in Saudi Arabia, say, or a country where there isn't as much transparency, putting it politely, if I as the ambassador or I as a diplomat go along and talk to an NGO there about the problems they're having about torture and about, you know, things going on in prison, the general human rights situation there, does that NGO person want that information given to me in confidence, which may lead to that person being in danger, splurged over the internet because someone leaks it? It strikes me that the public has got a contradictory interest there. On the one hand, you want us to help human rights in benighted places, if one can call them those. On the other hand, you've got an interest in transparency. So it comes down to where you draw the line. Where I think you shouldn't draw the line is anarchy.
And let me ask you, because I'm going to ask everyone this, in your personal life, do you accept that there have to be secrets, that there are some things that can't be shared even with people you know well? Is it integral to being a human being and the way we deal with each other that you have secrets, or is it something to aspire to that you're completely honest about everything?
Well, I would probably tend to be on the more honest end of the spectrum. I have a blog. I mean, I write about my life very freely. The issue of whether the price at which your house is sold is on the internet anyway, because you go on you can find that out. So I think we're moving to a world in which a lot of things which previously were seen as private are now no longer private for one reason or the other. The question is, who should own the privacy? Should the privacy be owned by whoever leaks, or should you have some reasonable expectation of privacy as a private citizen? Mm-hmm. And should that extend to governments as well, for the sake of some sort of generalised idea of efficiency, and who should decide?
And let's bring in Andrew, who's been listening to this from Hong Kong. Which area of this would you like to pick up on, Andrew?
Well, there are a number of aspects here. As in so many things in life or in this world, I would stress the word of balance, first of all. And of course, in certain areas, there is a right to privacy, as there is a right to know. And there is a need for balance in the two. For example, take diplomatic confidentiality. Now, if everything is out in the open, then it puts at risk the practice of the very, very useful practice of diplomats or countries conducting certain negotiations in private or in confidence, with knowledge that what they say would not be leaked out to the public. And if everything what they say or what they say behind doors is leaked to the world at large, then it would be very, very difficult for countries or for diplomats to build up any sort of trust in their conversations or in their even in their negotiations behind doors, with the knowledge that eventually everything will be out in the open. So I think that would not be good for the world, or nor be good for diplomacy. So that's the first area I would like to touch upon, that there is a need for a certain degree of confidentiality or confidence in diplomatic relations and diplomatic negotiations or discussions. It's not that everything should be done behind doors, but in certain circumstances there is need to do so, and it would be useful to have that channel kept in confidence.
And let's bring in Anthony again in Sydney, because Anthony, I want to understand what your attitude towards this is. Both in their different ways, Charles and Andrew have argued that you have to allow privacy to be part of this system or the system breaks down. Are you looking for actually a new system of working, whether it's in government or in business, where we learn to have dealings which we accept will be public?
I think very much so. I mean, I think to compare, for example, one's personal life about one's bank details or other issues to the role of governments is a bit disingenuous. I mean, clearly there is elements or need for privacy in terms of one's personal life in various different areas. But as I said, there's a fundamental difference here. I mean, the former ambassador talked about Saudi Arabia and rightly says that Saudi Arabia isn't the most transparent country in the world. Of course, he's very correct, and I've spent time there. But the problem is that what these cables, as one quick example, show is that Saudi Arabia, one of our closest allies of the West, of Britain, of America, of Australia, in that part of the world, is actually funding some of the worst terrorist organizations that our countries are supposedly fighting in various countries. Now, the problem with this is, although we arguably knew that, but these cables have confirmed it, is that we are essentially in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, amongst other places, allegedly fighting for freedom, which is what we're told and sold by our governments, and yet the governments who are funding it are our best friends in that part of the world. So I suppose Surely in this particular case, and you, amongst many other examples, transparency in how US foreign policy, Australian foreign policy, British foreign policy works is vital. And I think one of the problems that many people in the establishment don't like is how embarrassing these revelations actually are. Embarrassment should not be a reason not to publish information. And surely,
I don't think even those in the US State Department or Hillary Clinton herself would say that this hasn't been embarrassing on occasions. I don't think anyone is disagreeing on that. Alan in Arizona has posted at worldhaveyoursay.com. He says, I'm very happy PayPal stopped dealing with WikiLeaks. I use PayPal all the time and I'm glad they no longer support actions of espionage. Sanusi's in Sierra Leone. He says, we have to distinguish clearly between confidentiality and secrecy. Confidentiality involves one person. Confidentiality, yes. Secrecy, no, says Sanusi. And Melizek tweets us, and we're at BBC_WHYS if you want to follow us on Twitter. If Julian Assange was in China doing the same thing, the West would have called him a dissident and given him a Nobel Peace Prize. Speaking of the Nobel Peace Prize, that's being awarded on Friday, and China and I think it's 19 other countries are not going to be attending. I suspect we may turn our attentions to that on World Have Your Say on Friday. Now, one thing that isn't being kept secret or under lock and key are the numbers to get in touch. If you want to text us, it's country code 44 7786 206080, or you can call us on country code 44 2070 83 72 72. Now, let's bring in Hashim Ismail. And by the way, we've had to say goodbye to Barbara Sherbachev, so thank you very much to her for being with us. But Hashim Ismail's with us. He's in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, is a member of Transparency International, an anti-corruption organisation. Hashim, you've even got transparency in the name of your organisation. So how far would you take it? What kind of transparency do you demand of individuals as well as of governments?
Are we talking about WikiLeaks now?
Well, we're not just talking about WikiLeaks, really. We know that you want governments not to be corrupt, but do you accept right. that governments and individuals are allowed, deserve to be able to keep secrets?
No, governments are not allowed to keep secrets, but individuals, yes, they have to have secrets. Now, to what extent the government are entitled to keep secrets? Now, whatever is should be public knowledge will be public knowledge. And simply stamping a document confidential or secret for how long? Yes, governments have no right to keep secrets because they are elected by the people, they are answerable to the people, and unless it's in the interest of the people, which in very rare cases it's not, then yes, they have to be open.
Charles Crawford, you worked for government for over 30 years. Do governments have the right to keep secrets?
Let me give you three practical examples of areas which I think would be difficult if the last speaker and some of the others had their way. I was in South Africa as a young diplomat. I went to Zambia to meet Thabo Mbeki, who was then with the ANC, and briefed him on the work we were doing in the embassy to help various township organisations which we knew were effectively ANC organisations. This is in 86, 87. If that record of that conversation had leaked because someone had put it on the internet when I went back to South Africa and wrote it up and sent it to London, you know, people who were working for freedom in South Africa could have been brutalised as a result of that, even more than they were already. That's one example. Second example.
Before you carry on to the next example, they might all have said, hold on, you're against sanctions, but at the same time, Margaret Thatcher's saying, I don't want sanctions against South Africa, but at the same time, you're meeting the ANC, and that might have, if that had become public, people would have looked at what Margaret Thatcher was saying in public, looked at what was happening behind the scenes, and said, can we have a little consistency here?
They may have done that. I mean, I'm not saying that any one of these things is clearly overwhelmingly good or clearly overwhelmingly bad. It's all about trade-offs. But there are reasons to think, especially if you're dealing with very repressive regimes, that the trade-offs may be very negative, and there may be some upside, there may be some deep downside. Let me give you another one. I was ambassador in Belgrade. We were helping track down Karadzic and Mladic, the suspected war criminals. We did various deals with the Serbian government, including the prime minister, who was then assassinated by gangs associated with these people. That information strikes me as something you should keep very secret because you're going after dangerous international criminals and there's an operational requirement not to sort of blurt out what it is you're doing for all sorts of completely obvious reasons. A different sort of example was when I was ambassador in Warsaw. The EU was negotiating the EU budget deal. I had to send back to London my assessment of the Polish negotiating position. Other ambassadors were doing the same. If those papers had been leaked, it would have made it very difficult, I think, for me to carry on operating, but it also might have made it far less likely the Poles would share information with me. We would have lost out.
If you're listening to Charles and would like to speak to him, tell him you're convinced or otherwise, do call up. It's country code 44 2070 83 72 72. And I'm also, I'm interested to focus in particular on how companies work. I mean, lots of you I know listen in the States and in Central America at lunchtime. And if you're in the office now, do you think it would be helpful if everyone sitting around you knew how much you earned and you knew how much they earned? Is that the kind of transparency that could transform the workplace? Do let us know. I guess if you're sitting at your computer, the easiest way to get in touch is worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com. Let's bring in another guest here. Jeff Jarvis is a very well-known blogger, well, not just in the States and around the world. Many of you will follow him at buzzmachine.com. He's been on the programme before talking about related issues to this. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for coming back on.
Hi there.
Hi. Now, last time we invited you onto the programme, you had just told those of us who follow you on your blog and Twitter that you'd been diagnosed with cancer and that you were planning to share the details of your treatment with everyone. For people who didn't hear that programme those months ago, just explain why you're so committed to this idea of transparency in our own personal lives as well as in our government's lives.
Because I've learned the value of it thanks to my blog and these other technologies. So when I connect with people, it is almost invariably good. Are there bad actors in life? Yes, there are. Of course there are. But just as there are online and offline. But by telling people that I have prostate cancer, and even going so far as to tell people about my penis and what it won't do, you can't get much more transparent than that. I've found people who came to me who had the surgery, who gave me a very clear view of what was going to happen to me, better than any doctor could. I inspired some other men to get the test. I heard other important stories. I learned more. Nothing bad came of this, and only good came of it. Now, I'm not saying that I'm against privacy. I'm very much for privacy. I'm very much for the need for secrecy in certain cases. But I think we've become too closed down, especially in government, and we risk losing the benefits of connections that the Internet creates. And one thing that WikiLeaks has exposed, I think, again, we need secrecy in matters of security, criminal investigation, citizens' privacy, and much of diplomacy. I'll agree with that. But the default of government has become secrecy, when the default should be transparency, privacy only by necessity, secrecy by necessity.
Andrew Leung, listening to Jeff in New York, New York State, you're in Hong Kong, Andrew. Are you persuaded by the case he makes?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly good summary because, as I was saying in the beginning, you've got to balance different kind of wants or needs. There is a right to know, especially the right to know of the citizens vis-a-vis their governments. And governments should really be very, very open about what they do or what they intend to do, although what the details of that action, especially with other governments, could be kept secret or could be kept in confidence. But there is no doubt the government should be more open towards their constituencies. But on the other hand, there is a need for privacy. You know, individuals, as much as a part of the human right, is the entitlement to a certain degree of privacy. Because all our personal lives, all the details which individuals want to keep...
And Andrew, I think a lot of people on email and on the blog are saying they absolutely feel a commitment to privacy. It's just a question of where... They allow information about their lives to come out. Jeff's been talking about his medical records. Would you do what he's doing?
We've heard the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hi, I'm Ross Atkins. I'm just looking through your messages that are coming in on this issue of whether we want a world without secrets, a transparent world. How far would you take transparency? Ihaz in Nigeria says, I'm so disgusted by Visa and MasterCard, I'm destroying all of my credit cards. Philip in Lusaka says, in the real world, you can't afford not to conceal certain information. That is just the way it is. And Grace is in Accra. She says, well, we can see from all the dirty revelations on WikiLeaks that it's not so realistic to have the kind of transparent world they have in mind. Are we ready to pay the price for this kind of transparency? Many have different motives for whistleblowing, and it's not always for the common good. A lot of wisdom is needed. Unfortunately, we live in an increasingly ungodly world where people will sell anything for power, fame, or money.
Text us on country code 44 77 86 20 60 80.
Email what have you sent at bbc.co.uk.
Nicholas is listening to us in New Mexico. He's just emailed to say, I work at a public university in the US, and every month the university publishes a salary book which lists the salary for every employee. It's an interesting read to see how much people make, especially the ones you think make too much. It helps to keep departments accountable because any member of the university can see how much people are compensated. And I just wonder, Hashim, you're a former businessman. You're live with us from Dar es Salaam. Do you think it's appropriate for businesses to declare how much they're paying their employees?
If it is a public business, yes. It's a private business, I don't think they're bound to declare the earnings of the employees.
What about if they just told the employees, so they didn't tell rival businesses, but amongst the company they shared that information? Would that be appropriate?
Yes, very appropriate within the company, because it also helps motivate the people who are lower down.
So you would do that, Charles, if you ran a business, I'm sure you have at some point in your career, would you want everyone who worked within that business to know each other's salaries?
Well, to be honest,
I would want to, but it should not be, barred from knowing it.
So that's your view, Hashim. I'm just asking Charles here in the studio with me.
Well, I don't really have a problem with this sort of thing. I think if it's down to the business choosing, that's one thing. Should businesses be forced to do that? That's another thing.
I suppose I'm asking, would the business and the people who work within it be better off, fundamentally better off? For that, would it be a fairer, more just way of operating a business?
I wouldn't personally have a problem with that, but I can see that other people, depends on the scale of the business, depends how you run the business, and depends a little bit, I think, on how you think that information might leak out. Because if you think it's going to leak out and sort of somehow or other compromise you in the marketplace with your keen competitors, then it might do a lot of damage. Just say, for example, I'm employing someone for 20,000. My competitor says, good grief, he's only paying him that. I'll offer him 30. Mm. So you could end up in a real muddle.
Andrew, what about you in Hong Kong? If businesses started making public or at least telling their employees how much each other earned, would that cause problems?
Well, I think that if there is a salary scale, which are out in the open in the first place, when companies recruit people, then there's everything is in the public domain right in the first place. But there are companies which pay their staff on a special commission basis, and individuals who work for the company prefer to have that amount of commission kept confidential to themselves. Then that would be a contract between the company and those employees. I don't have any problem with more transparency, but I stress right at the beginning that there are areas both in business and private lives and in diplomacy and in state security that need to be kept secret for a very, very good reason, and that's all for the common good, not just for the sake of the individuals themselves. But take, for example, the trade, the business. In Hong Kong, there was an actual case where a company used the private data of the customers and trade those private data for a profit. But that's really an infringement between privacy and the business of that company. And that's obviously not acceptable. As a result, that company was penalized publicly. So that there are certain areas we need to strike a balance. And what needs to be in the public domain has got to be clearly defined. And also governments, as well as business, need to build trust with their constituencies.
Okay,
more transparency is good in that direction. But there is another thing for data, for details, which are supposed to be kept confidential for a very, very good reason, to be out in the open because some investigative...
But Andrew, I think let me just jump in here, because I think the idea that's being proposed with regards to more transparency in our lives and in business is not that someone goes in and like releases this information. It's just that business cultures develop where it's a stated policy of that business that this information is public. Jeff Jarvis, you're involved in a number of different businesses. Would you advocate that kind of honesty from the beginning?
Yes, but it's much more than just taking something you already do and being more public about it. It's the opportunity to collaborate that is created by being open. So you have a company like Local Motors in the U.S. that has open collaborative design of cars. That sounds absurd. In the end of the day, there has to be one design, but the community is very much involved, makes economic decisions, makes design decisions. The reason you have this show on the BBC is because you have this need to hear more from people, though it tends to be a bit after the fact. What you also need, of course, is people who tell you what they want to know, and what do they know and not know, and who should you talk to. You see reporters out there on Twitter now who are asking their public help with stories. That's the kind of collaboration that being public enables. That's where you get value back. So it's not just about saying, well, we're going to take this one spreadsheet we have in the business and allow people to see it and call ourselves public. That's like the White House saying that it is transparent because it shares the visitor logs at the West Wing, when in fact, transparency would mean that WikiLeaks wouldn't have had anything to leak worth anything. But that's not the case.
I agree.
Because we're overly secret, like, and businesses are the same.
And Jeff, I can hear Anthony in Sydney coming in. If people are just joining us, Anthony's a journalist and author in Australia. Please carry on, Anthony.
I was just going to say that one of the things that's been very revealing in the last few weeks is how many of the so-called secrets that WikiLeaks have released weren't actually necessarily secret. My point being that a lot of the things that the documents and the cables, for example, information that showed the US put pressure on Germany and Spain to not prosecute potential American officials who'd been complicit in alleged torture against people after 9/11, things like that do not need to be secret. They are kept secret, of course, because it's very embarrassing for the US to be seen to be doing things like that. So I think there's a danger often in suggesting that information is kept secret and it's judged to be secret by a government. Governments, of course, want to often keep information secret because they believe it. That's the way they need to do diplomacy. And I think one of the things that's become very clear in the last few weeks, and indeed before that, is often how ineffective the rules of the world that have been designed years ago actually are, and how separate from government so many citizens are, and how little information we actually know really about what actually governments are doing in our name. We shouldn't forget, of course, that governments act for us, not the other way around.
But now I think
governments are acting for us.
Now, Anthony, I think we're getting to the meat of it, and Charles, maybe you can come in here. It's whether you want to reveal information about a system just because it's relevant to the public, or whether by revealing the information you actually seek to change it, because Anthony's saying what we've got at the moment isn't effective. We need a new way of doing things.
Well, let me just give you one terribly micro example. I was in the car the other day listening to the BBC, as one does, and there was a discussion about should all children be entitled to know the DNA of their parents, because now you've got the different way of knowing who your father is. And at the moment, the default position appears to be you shouldn't have that information as a matter of right. So these issues of privacy are right at the very heart of our own existence, partly because technology is forcing open new fields of possibility in this area, as Jeff's described, I think. And personally, I'm on the Jeff Jarvis end of the spectrum, if I can put it that way, because I think he made an eloquent case. But he also drew some lines about some things for operational reasons really having to be kept protected very well. Now, I would say I'd agree, I think, with the last speaker to some extent that a lot of what's in diplomatic cables is probably overclassified. And you can make a case that we in the UK, for example, ought to change our classification system so that a lot more stuff wouldn't necessarily be put out. But if it was put out, there wouldn't be any sanction. I mean, I'm coming to this partly as a lawyer. It doesn't really matter how you draw the lines for the purpose of this discussion. The real issue is, if someone oversteps the line, are there going to be sanctions? And I think this is the issue we really have to face. What bothers me really about the whole debate is that there are, going back to where I started, a lot of governments in the world which do not believe that the public own the government. They believe the government owns the public. And that if we end up with a sort of Tower of Babel situation over here, so that almost everything that happens is subject to leaks in an uncontrolled, unmanageable way, will the civilizations which believe in democracy and transparency be at some sort of collective historical disadvantage? And you're seeing this played out partly in the Nobel Peace Prize process.
Well, you asked the question, what's your answer?
I think it may well be the case. And I think it's one thing letting everything hang out. The question is, will you then be worse off?
Jeff, is that you coming in?
I just said, well said, that's all.
Go okay, here. Well, Jeff, actually, I mean, I was going to come to you because, as I was mentioning right at the beginning of the programme, this idea of transparency can be applied to any number of different areas, whether it's government or business. Another area is journalism. And I know that, Jeff, a couple of years ago, you suggested that all journalists should declare their political allegiances, where they consume media. They should just let everything come out into the public domain. So I went onto Facebook and I just posted, you know, if I told you what I thought of Julian Assange and what I think about WikiLeaks, would you prefer prefer me to do that? And everyone who's replied has said, no, we want journalists to keep those opinions to themselves. It would affect their ability to do their job. So in terms of transparency in journalism, where do you stand now?
You have those opinions, I suspect, and by not sharing them, you're concealing that for some reason. Now, there are practical reasons why a journalist might not say out loud, I think the mayor is an idiot, because he has to cover that mayor. Okay, fine, I understand that. But in general, if your default is public, we expect the rest of the world to be public. We expect them to tell us everything. When we don't, we set a poor example. We also are kind of not giving faith to our audience. The reason I love media in the UK so much, and full disclosure is that I write for The Guardian, is that I can come to the UK and I can see The Guardian and see The Telegraph and triangulate viewpoints from a worldview that it starts from the left and starts from the right. They are still incredible journalists at both places. They operate by a standard of intellectual honesty, of completeness, of fairness, of the eternal verities of journalism. But I do know their worldview, and I know how that colors the stories they decide to do, the decisions they make, and I find that very helpful, and then I judge them in accordance.
Let me put that to Hashim in Dar es Salaam. Hashim, do you want journalists to be transparent about their political allegiances, where they're coming from?
No, they should not be have any allegiance in the first place, but if they do, they should declare it, and I think they declare it every day. You have newspapers, for example, that say this is a supporting political parties in the UK and in Tanzania as well. So that much transparency maybe already is understood. On the other hand, journalists have always been journalists. They know they work within the limits of their legal limits, and they know what the consequence will be if they overstep the limits. Mm-hmm. No, I think journalists need to be transparent only to themselves and to the profession.
Okay, so we've heard from Jeff in New York State, Hashim's in Dar es Salaam, Anthony's up very early in Sydney speaking to us. Anthony, you are a journalist and you've spent the last 45 minutes telling us where you stand, so presumably you are happy to share that information while plying your trade.
Very much so. I actually agree with Jeff. I've actually read that Jeff's made those comments in the past, and I agree. I think it's very important. I write a blog and I write for publications around the world, including Australia, and I think it's important that readers do know where journalists stand. I think, as Jeff rightly says, we demand transparency, or some journalists do, from politicians, from the business world, whatever. And the idea of knowing, for example, who one votes for, what one's views are, being transparent, actually saying to readers, what do you think about this? You know, the fact that I, for example, vote a certain way at the election, or don't vote in a certain way, or have certain views. I think the problem is that too many journalists hide under the idea of so-called objectivity, when in fact, if one chooses a certain position in a newspaper or publication, you are generally speaking coming from a certain point of view anyway. The sort of paper you might work for, the kind of editor you might work for, you may have no choice, but often you do have a choice. And I think in the WikiLeaks saga in the last few weeks, we've seen many journalists, not all at all, but many journalists around the world, I think, resent the fact two things. One, that the leaker did not come to the newspapers first. They went to WikiLeaks. And secondly, that Julian Assange himself is an outsider. He doesn't play the media game. Sure, he's now working with the major newspapers to get his message out, whether people like that or not. But he hasn't played the media game of being an insider. And I think too many journalists in the mainstream press in many countries are too keen to be players and to be too close to power and don't question that enough. And I think there should be far more transparency in that kind of relationship.
And Jeff, I should tell you, when you originally wrote that post a year or two ago, I took it into a very senior editor here at the BBC and I said, what do you think about this? Do you think we should all do this? And they gave me a wry smile, which was all they had to say, was that if we even dreamt of declaring our political allegiances, our time on the air would probably be reasonably limited. Charles, you want to come in?
I think the BBC is a very interesting example, because a lot of areas of what the BBC does are specifically exempt from the Freedom of Information Act here in the UK. For example, BBC editorial policy, as I understand it, if I want to try and find out how the BBC labels some people insurgents, some people terrorists, some people freedom fighters, that information is not publicly available, even though I, as a member of the public, are paying for it through my licence fee. For example, if you've got a presenter who happens to be some sort of extremist, one or the other, these people may exist here, and he just say he's a Trotskyist or something, and he then interviews people who are Trotskyists but doesn't declare that, the power of the BBC could be put behind certain political positions without anyone knowing, including, for that matter, BBC people. So I think there's a real role for public journalists in being a lot more transparent.
I don't know the details of that. Exact rules.
Well, BBC
the
salaries.
Guidelines.
BBC salaries. There's been a big battle about how far down the food chain.
All I was
going
to say was,
I
can promise you on this programme at least, and I think this applies to the vast majority of BBC programmes, if you were to email us and say, why did you do this or why did you do that, you would get a thorough reply.
That's not the same as having a right to know that. What I get is a matter of your discretion.
Well, it is yeah. With the example that you give, but I don't know the setup with the editorial guidelines, so we'll have to return to you on that one. But Jeremy says, recently I found a document on the network at my place of employment. This document contained the hourly wage of all hourly workers. I could have leaked this document to others, but decided that it would only have caused dissent between workers and caused dissatisfaction. Therefore, I informed my employer and the file is now locked. And this is a point, Andrew Leung, in Hong Kong, that's been made a few times on email, which is that people can't really see what's in it for them, what they'll gain from increased transparency. They seem to believe in the current way that we all interact, whether at work or at home or in government.
Well, can I come into this once again?
Sure.
Now, I think, going back to the WikiLeaks, I think that's an extreme example of investigative journalism, if you like. And there is a very, very good role for investigative journalism. I think it's very all to the good because it acts as a kind of a check on government to keep certain things secret, which should be in the public domain, and businesses keeping secret to their customers or even to their employers, which are things which are should be in the public domain to restore the kind of trust. So there is a role for investigative journalism, but on the other hand, investigative journalists, like any journalist, have a responsibility to maintain the kind of confidentiality when it touches on, for example, privacy, strict areas of privacy, when it touches on very sensitive areas of diplomacy, which countries, the various interlocutors, act in the first place on the basis of a mutual trust of confidentiality, and when it touches on trade secrets, for example, and as far as national security is concerned, that's even more important. Think what would happen if a nuclear button, if the coal could become, you know, sort of public domain. Mm-hmm. The whole world will be in chaos. So there are certain areas which we need to be very, very careful and maintain the degree of responsibility against the need for transparency, which is a good thing.
Okay, well let's explore those ideas of the
balance. It's a very, very need for very careful judgment.
Andrew, let's explore those ideas of the risks we might be taking. Just before we did, Charles and I were talking about the BBC's editorial guidelines, and I didn't pick a direct disagreement with you because I wasn't 100% sure, but I was pretty sure. And my colleague Ben, who's editing the programmes, just sent me, if you go to bbc.co.uk/editorial guidelines, you can read the whole lot. It's all up online for anyone in the world to see. And I'm just looking at a page called Language When Reporting Terrorism, which will explain everything behind the reasons we use one word or another in different situations. So that is all up there and fully transparent, I guess, if we want to use the word at the centre of today's programme.
Another example here?
Please do, Jeff.
I'll give you another example here. That I survived the attack on the World Trade Center. I was in the last train in. That's important for people to know because I do have certain viewpoints and opinions that come out of that. I changed my view of the world in part because of that. In some cases, it's not the case. But I think it's important for my readers, people who hear me, to be able to judge that. Sometimes they say, I think you're only saying that because, you know, you were freaked by being there. And maybe I don't know the answer to that, but it's up to them to be able to decide that. And I have the trust in them to make that decision. Some people will disagree with me and just say that I'm full of junk because they want to. That's fine. That'll always be the case. But the more open I am about this, the more they can trust me. Same as we do with making mistakes in our business. I've learned that making an error does not reduce my credibility. When I correct it, it enhances my credibility in the hope that I will do that the next time. And there's all kinds of odd things that come out of transparency. There's a company in the U.S. called Blippi that enables people to share what they bought via their credit cards. And that sounds on its face to be utterly insane. But for getting transparency of salary, it leads to transparency of pricing. So at some point, never again are you going to pay too much for a television because you're going to know the going rate. Now, that has huge impact on retail and on the market, but that's where we're headed, is to an assumption of transparency.
So Jeff makes the case again, but I just wonder, Anthony in Sydney, and we've also got Barry in Sierra Leone, who I will come to in a moment, but Anthony in Sydney, you and Jeff sound so convinced about this, but are there not some serious downsides to us all, whether it's our governments or our businesses or as individuals, sharing the amount of information which you and Jeff are suggesting?
I guess the simple answer is probably yes. I mean, there are always dangers, and it's about human beings have the ability, I guess, to filter, to work out, to evaluate, to make judgments, and one has to do that for everything. But when the example...
Anthony, I'm just going to sort that line out. It's behaved itself for 50-odd minutes. I've no idea why it's playing up now. We'll sort that out. In the meantime, let's go to Barry in Sierra Leone, who hopefully is on a better line. Hi, Barry. Would you like to live in a more transparent world?
Yes. But what I want to say, everybody have a secret, have its own privacy, you know. And it's very, very wrong for someone to go into somebody's personal affairs and privacy and secrets in the name of transparency. You know, it's wrong, and religiously it's prohibited, you know.
So, I don't think anyone on this program has suggested anyone should be able to go into someone's private life and make that information public. But what about if you were working in Sierra Leone? Would you be happy for your business to be public about how much you and your colleagues were being paid? Is that the kind of information that we should share?
Yes. But what I'm saying, you know, we have, everybody has its own personal affairs, you know, has its own secrets, you know, and it's wrong for anybody to go into somebody's personal affairs, somebody's...
Okay, so, as I understand what you're saying, is that you wouldn't mind if the company was up front and had a policy about it, but you would take offence if you were working somewhere and they suddenly decided to make all of that information public. Anne's listening to us on WGCU in Florida. She says, do you think the disparity in wages between men and women would have possibly continued to this day if wages and salaries were public? It's a known phenomenon, but still continues because of a lack of transparency. Hashim Ismail in Dar es Salaam, you've worked in business. If every business made their wages public, then surely men and women would be paid the same, which doesn't happen in any country I'm aware of.
Undoubtedly, yes. This had to be made public a long, long time before. Now that we're heading to there. There was no women's rights before, now have their rights. We had no women in parliament. We now have women in parliament, and I think we're heading towards a situation where women will have their rights, and not just women. Wherever there are inequalities based on one element of community in the other. So yes, it's, I think we are in the right direction.
And Andrew Leung, are you persuaded by that argument in Hong Kong that a number of people have mentioned this, men and women aren't paid the same? Transparency would sort that out, wouldn't it?
Well, not necessarily, because I think that, as I was saying, there are a lot of companies and governments who, in the first place, publish their salary scales applicable to both men and women. And obviously, these salary scales are obviously equal. But on the other hand, depending on the positions where they occupy and the promotion of various people up the ladder, in practice, it's not necessarily equal. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that just by being more transparent in salary scales would answer would address the issue. There is a great a deal more to be done in terms of achieving gender equality, and there is a great deal to be done for more transparency in all sectors of life. But I said right at the beginning, one has to balance this against the very legitimate needs for a certain degree of confidentiality
confidentiality, privacy, and national security, and also trade secrets. And so I think that these domains need also to be respected, and people should be held, should be to take a more responsible attitude to those
areas. And Andrew, if people agree with you or disagree with you, they're going to have to do it on Twitter, on Facebook, or on our blog, because they're not going to have any time to do it on the radio, because we're just about out of it here on World Have Your Say. Thanks to Andrew Leung in Hong Kong, Jeff Jarvis from Buzz Machine in New York State. Charles, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. Do come back on the program again. Charles Crawford was a British diplomat for over 30 years. Thanks also to Hashim Ishmael from Transparency International in Dar es Salaam. And last but not least, Anthony Lowenstein in Sydney, who got up very early indeed. I don't know if he's going back to bed or if he's just going to get on with his day. Do carry on the conversation. Facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. We'll be back tomorrow talking about corruption. Oh,